It's the Kim Munson Show, analyzing the most important stories.
Socialization of transportation, education, energy, housing, and water. What it means is that government controls it through rules and regulations.
The latest in politics and world affairs.
Under this guise of bipartisanship and nonpartisanship, it's actually tapped down the truth.
Today's current opinions and ideas.
On an equal field in the battle of ideas, mistruths or misconceptions, and it is getting us into a world of hurt.
Is it freedom or is it force? Let's have a conversation.
And welcome to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. That's Kim Munson, MUNSON.com. You can sign up for our weekly newsletter there. And that way you get first look at all of the upcoming guests, as well as our most recent Sounding Off with Kim Munson podcast and our most recent op-eds. You can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. And be sure and go over to Facebook and give us a like also. It is Labor Day, so wishing you a very grand day today. And as always, I like to say thank you to this great team that I get to work with. That is producer Steve, Zach, Keith, Patty, and Charlie, and of course the people here at Crawford Broadcasting. Speaking of Labor Day, we work really hard as we engage in this battle of ideas of freedom versus force, force versus freedom. So it is Labor Day, producer Steve.
Yeah, it's kind of one of those days that has a bad connotation with me, even though it was many, many years ago. Labor Day signaled the start of school just 2 days later. We started without fail the Wednesday after Labor Day. So end of summer, here comes school.
Here comes school. Well, of course, now kids are looking forward to getting to school. So isn't that interesting?
Yeah. Talk about the big turnaround.
Yeah, that is for sure. So this week is going to be a really interesting week. We're going to talk about capitalism. Actually, today we'll be talking about the opposite of capitalism, which is socialism, with Bill Federer. And you know him. He is a nationally known speaker, best-selling author, and president of Amerisearch, which is a publishing company dedicated to researching America's noble heritage. Bill's American Minute radio feature is a broadcast daily across America. You can hear it right here on KLZ 560. And his Faith in History television show airs on TCT. He was born in 1957. And so his quote today is, "Persistence wears down resistance." And I think that's a very apropos quote as we think about working hard and capitalism and the American idea and opportunity. So again, Steve, persistence wears down resistance.
The first thing I think of is Thomas Edison. Persistence. If he hadn't been persistent, he would have given up really early in the game, and he did not. Or here's another one you might not think of right away, Milton S. Hershey.
Oh, yeah? Really?
Hershey.
Because you're a Pennsylvania kid.
That's right. And Hershey, would, if he would have not been persistent, he would have given it up, because he had several other attempts at being, you know, a candy maker in one way or another, and he just couldn't make it go. And on a whim, he just went out and said, how about milk chocolate instead of, you know, the European type of chocolate making? And, you know, the rest is history, as they say.
Uh-huh. A milk chocolate. I actually like milk chocolate. I know that they say that dark chocolate is really good for you, but I've always liked milk chocolate. So that must be an American thing, huh?
Yeah, yeah. And Hershey, and anybody who's ever been to Hershey, Pennsylvania, and knows the story, it is the ultimate success story. And it doesn't mean there weren't some really strange times, especially like in and around the Depression.
Well, and you know, this really is, as we're thinking about Labor Day and hard work, you know, it's been hard work and this whole American idea, Steve, that all men are created equal. And as Calvin Coolidge said, if all men are created equal, then that is final. I mean, what else can you talk to about that with these inalienable rights from God of life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness? And the American idea was founded upon that. And what it has given us is everyday people can succeed and they can thrive and they can prosper. And that's the beauty of the American idea, this big, broad middle class that of people being able to create wealth and go after their hopes and dreams, work hard, stay persistent, don't give up, is really inherent in the American idea.
Well, you know, labor's had its ups and downs. And I'm thinking, again, I keep going back to Hershey. Once he got the milk chocolate process off the ground and mass producing, the whole economy started to be building up on that. Now, I'm talking about the farmers and their milk production. Well, the chocolate workers went on strike, and all of a sudden, this milk supply was backing up with not really good ways to store it.
Right.
And it got so desperate that the farmers gathered one day with their bats and their sticks, and they went into the factory, and they ended the strike.
I have never heard that story.
Yep, strike was over.
And the cows were back in production then.
Yeah.
Huh. Interesting. Well, I love these American stories, and there's so many of them. We look at these issues, my friends, as freedom versus force, force versus freedom. Although, and we're seeing here in America right now, this use of fear, and this use of fear has closed down many of our businesses, and we need to get them reopened so that people can go back and work hard, labor, and we need to make sure that we do that. My friends, remember, it is never compassionate to take other people's rights, their property, their freedom, or their livelihood via force, whether it's with a weapon, policy, your favorite, Steve, unpredictable and excessive taxation or fear. If something is a good idea, you should not have to use force to implement it. And ultimately, socialism comes down to force. Now, we may be getting together with family and friends today, and it could be an opportunity to engage in this battle of ideas. One thing I'd like to mention, we'll talk with Jason McBride at the bottom of the hour. He had done an excellent analysis of the Trump tax cuts. He compared apples to apples, a middle-class family. Did they actually have more money in their pocket with the Trump tax cuts? Now, the Democrats like to say that those cuts were only for millionaires and billionaires. But Jason has actually taken a look at that and has proven that everyday hardworking people have more money in their pocket with the Trump tax cuts. And that is a tool that you need to have when you're talking with people out there that don't think that those were a good idea. And so go to our website together, that is airpresidential.com, AIR presidential.com, and the analysis is there. You can request that, and Jason will get that over to you. Also, as we're talking with friends and family, we need to be asking these critical thinking questions. Rudyard Kipling, who was the author of The Jungle Book, he was born in 1865, died in 1936. He says, "I keep six honest serving men. They taught me all I knew. Their names are what and why and when and how and where and who." And producer Steve, these questions are the bedrock of when you are engaging with others, to be asking these questions. And we need to be pushing people to intellectual curiosity, hopefully to a point where they might move away and add some other news sources in from the mainstream media that they may be watching. I can tell you, I talk to so many different people that say once they start to dig for other sources, they realize that they are being lied to, and it's like they're hungry to get more information, Steve.
It's vitally important, and you've already put it out there. With the mainstream media, we're getting half stories or half truths, and those questions that all begin with, well, yeah, how is begins with an H, but all those questions that begin with a W or an H are vitally important, especially when, again, they've only given you half of the story. Nancy Pelosi, she's excellent at that. She'll throw some little tidbit out there that only represents half of the idea, but and then she drops it there. She leaves it there, and then the press will pick it up, and they'll run with it. And it's like, there's more to that story. There's more to that topic.
And you know what is so difficult, Steve, is when people put out those half-truths, it's like we have to know so much more because we're searching for truth. And somebody said that, truth is facts with context. And that is why we do this show, is to bring these issues forward so that you can arm yourself in this battle of ideas and engage in conversation. And I'm no longer buying this. We don't talk about politics and religion in private with others.
Good company.
Good company, whatever it is. Because that is taking away our freedom of thought and our freedom of speech. And so we need to be thoughtful and reasonable, but we need to engage in these conversations. We're going to go to break here in just a minute. Before we do that, though, it is Labor Day week, beautiful time in Colorado. Highly recommend that you go over to Hooters Restaurants. You can watch the sports that are on television. They've got a happy hour Monday through Friday, 3 to 6 p.m., with all kinds of different specials. They have five locations. That is Loveland, Westminster, Aurora, Lone Tree, and Colorado Springs. Wednesdays are Wings Day, all the wings you can eat for $15.99 if you dine in. They have lunch specials, kids eat free promotion. So just enjoy yourself. Let's take advantage of this. And we're going to go to break. We'll be right back with Bill Federer.
Metropolitan Total Property is more than landscaping. Locally owned and operated since 1987, their team is proud to be your neighbor and live in the community. Metropolitan Total Property stands behind their work, and your complete satisfaction is their top priority. Kim Munson highly recommends Metropolitan Total Property for landscaping and more. She was one of their very first clients way back in 1987. Be sure to check out MetropolitanTotalProperty.com for their complete menu of services. Again, that's MetropolitanTotalProperty.com.
Recently, rates in the mortgage market have hit near record lows. Lauren Levy with Polygon Financial notes that the COVID-19 Wuhan virus disruption has created potential opportunities to refinance your mortgage that could save you thousands of dollars. And for those senior listeners who may be looking for another source of income, exploring a reverse mortgage with Lauren Levy may be a solution. With over 17 years in the mortgage industry, Lauren Levy has the experience to answer your questions. Call Lauren Levy at 303-880-8881. That's 303-880-8881 for a mortgage checkup today.
All of Kim's sponsors are an inclusive partnership with Kim and are not affiliated with or in partnership with KLZ or Crawford Broadcasting. If you would like to support the work of the Kim Munson Show and grow your business, contact Kim at her website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com.
From the lakes of Minnesota to the hills of Tennessee, across the plains of Texas, from sea to shining sea.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. Be sure and check out our website. That is kimmunson.com. That's M-O-N-S-O-N.com. You can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. And be sure to sign up for our weekly newsletter. That is where you will get first look at all of our upcoming guests, as well as our new Sounding Off with Kim Munson podcast and our op-eds. And we'd appreciate it if you would go over to Facebook and give us a like. And happy Labor Day to all of you out there. And wanted to talk about labor and the American dream and hard work. And one of those things that we're seeing in the narrative in the United States right now is socialism, kind of this romance of socialism. So on the line with me is William Federer, Bill Federer, and he is you hear him on KLZ all the time with the American Minute. He is really a historian. He understands Western culture, and he has a new book out, Socialism, The Real History from Plato to the Present. Bill Federer, welcome to the show.
Great to be with you, Kim.
This is quite a book that you have just recently written. So let's start. Let's start with Plato. How's that happen?
So 380 BC, Plato writes in passing of Atlantis, this highly advanced city on an island, and it sinks beneath the ocean. But he always looks to that as the perfect society, really structured. And then he says a democracy. The chief characteristic of a democracy is tolerance. Everybody tolerates each other. It's wonderful. It's like an embroidery patchwork with lots of colors. And then they tolerate people that are a little bit off. Then they tolerate people that are a lot off. So finally, they're tolerating crooks and crime and fraud and broad daylight looting, and criminals are roaming the streets. And people say, can't somebody do something about this? And then it says that the young man gives into libertinism and useless and unnecessary pleasures, even incest and unnatural union, right? So it's casting off of all moral restraints, turns into chaos, and the people say, can't someone fix this mess? And along comes some mayor or governor that says, I can fix it. I just need some emergency powers. And finally, they stand in the chariot of state holding the reins of power, and they're revealed as the tyrant. And so Plato says democracy won't last because it's based on the people having virtue, and they really don't have virtue, because if you give them a choice between giving up their life and giving up their virtue, they'll always give up their virtue to save their life. So it's just a matter of time till enough people give up the virtue and it turns into this moral chaos. And so he said, the best you can hope for is a nice tyrant. He is the philosopher king. He's the head of gold. And his political deep state enforcer class are the arms and chest of silver. They are the ruling class. And everyone else is in the ruled class. They are the abdomen of iron and bronze. They own no property. They have no privacy. Their children are taken away and brought into the city and indoctrinated with noble lies. Actually calls them lies. But they help the philosopher king to stay in power. And this is socialism. It's a structured society of a ruling class and a ruled class.
And this is now, what Plato said? This was all Plato that you just talked about?
Right, right. So every communist dictator thinks, oh, I'm the philosopher king. And it's like, yeah, right. You're a ruling class. And every pharaoh, dictator, Caesar, every socialist country always ends up with a dictator. Hitler was the head of the National Socialist Workers' Party. Stalin was the head of the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics. The problem is, whenever you get people administering any program, they want to keep their job and they want to stay in power. And so they're going to administer the program to funnel money to those that can keep them in power and take away money from those that challenge their power. And so that's the dilemma. And anyway, so let's fast forward 2,000 years and Columbus discovers America. And the scholars in Europe think, hey, there's new lands and we can set up new societies. And so 20 years later, Sir Thomas More writes Island of Utopia. The word utopia means nowhere. It's written as a dialogue where a guy's talking to a traveler. The traveler's name is Highland Deus, which means peddler of nonsense. And this guy's washed up on an island, supposedly off the coast of South America, discovered by Amerigo Vespucci. And lo and behold, on this island is a ruling class and a ruled class. And everything is structured. The people live in identical three-story houses. They wear identical clothes. They eat in identical communal eating halls like monasteries. The state decides who gets to have children. The state takes the children away from the family, indoctrinates them with lies, and the state chooses the careers for the kids. And you cannot travel anywhere without being tracked. You have to have your internal passport. And if you're caught without your passport, it's a lifetime of slavery. It's a totally controlled society, and that is utopia. Now, a century later, you have Sir Francis Bacon, and he writes The New Atlantis. So his book is actually referring directly back to the Atlantis of Plato. And this is an island in the South Pacific, a little more scientific because the scientific revolution took place, but still a structured society. And someone writes a farce on it called Gulliver's Travels. Jonathan Swift, right? This guy's washed up on an island, and lo and behold, there's this ruling class that controls everybody, and they're ridiculous. And then there's the ruled class. And now, why is all this important? This is theoretical. And the pilgrims discover America. And in England, the investors that start the company colony to finance the pilgrims, they write the bylaws. And the bylaws look back to Plato and Sir Thomas More, Sir Francis Bacon. The bylaw says everything is owned in common. Everything gained by cooking, hunting, fishing, trading shall go into ye common stock. And everyone's livelihood shall come out of ye common stock. And William Bradford said they almost starved to death. He says the young man objected to having to do twice as much work as the old guy, but didn't get any more. The old guy objected to being classed in labor with the young man and considered it a dishonor. The women objected to having to wash other men's clothes. And he says this communal living was tried by good and well-meaning people, which proves the emptiness of the theory of Plato, that the owning of things in common would make men happy as if they were wiser than God. But William Bradford specifically says that they prove the emptiness of the theory of Plato. So the pilgrims were actually trying to live this thing out where before it was all theoretical. Anyway, he says after much discussion, it was decided that every family should get their own plot of land. This made all hands more industrious. He said the women now went willingly into the field and took their little ones with them, where before they would allege weakness and to force them would have been great oppression. So here, they attempted this communal ownership of property. It failed, and then they scrapped it, and they said everybody gets their own. And so this is the beginnings of it. And in my book, I walk you all the way through the French Revolution and all the way up to the present.
Now, just a quick comment. I served on city council for 4 years, 2012 to 2016, in my community. And one of the narratives that I would hear from representatives, politicians, bureaucrats, and interested parties is we need to educate our kids for the for the next workforce, that they need to be educated for the workforce. And I tell you what, Bill, I was always really concerned about that. It didn't sit right with me, but I realized that's not the purpose of education. The purpose of education is in that classical liberal sense, where kids have the tools that, you know, they can certainly succeed, you know, run a household, run a business, but how to critically think. And I have now seen, you know, we fast forwarded to what's happening in America today, and I realized, no, we don't need to educate kids for the next workforce. We need to educate kids so that they can thrive and prosper kind of know who they are. What's your thoughts on that, Bill?
Yeah, exactly. So here in England, in Europe, it's socialist school, and you take tests. And if you are a kid and you don't score good on a couple tests, the government channels you into career paths. And if a couple years later it finally clicks and you want to decide to be a doctor, they say, sorry, you can't. Your career path is chosen for you. And so in America, you can say, hey, you know, I've worked this job, and I'm going to study at nighttime and do some online classes, and I'm going to switch my entire career. You have the freedom to be all that you want to be, whereas before, in Plato's model and in these socialist countries, the state decides. So it's this concept that trust the individual, not trust the deep state group that thinks they're wiser than everyone.
Well, most definitely. And you talk about the rulers and the ruled. And again, it's something that's so unique, and particularly on Labor Day while we're talking about this, is because of that freedom to be able to make those changes, America has had this big, big middle class. And you can't have a big middle class when you have socialism.
Right. So Frederick Engels and Karl Marx wrote the Communist Manifesto. Frederick Engels said that you have to get rid of the middle class in order to establish socialism. He says that they were alchemists of the revolution, spurring it into artificial crises, and every crisis must be worse than the one before, putting out of business more small capitalists. This will increase the number of the unemployed and create a commercial collapse, which will lead to a wonderful social revolution, right? So they literally plan. And so you look at the COVID response. What is it? Put businesses out of business. They say that a whole lot of businesses are not going to restart. And I get into it all. It's a domino effect. The COVID response is what? Let criminals out of jail. Who does that? And then crime goes up. Gee, we didn't see that coming. And then when crime goes up, people feel unsafe and they move out of the city. Who? Well, maybe those with children and families, and certainly those that can afford to move out. Well, who's left in the city? Maybe more people dependent on government handouts. Well, they tend to belong to two different parties. And then you shut down churches. That's where social conservatives gather. And now they're out. And then you let kids out of school who've been indoctrinated with Hate America, Howard Zinn's A People's History of the United States. And now you've got two-thirds of the rioters are spoiled high school and college kids that have been indoctrinated with Hate America. And so what the net result of the COVID response is the people of one political party are driven out, and the other party gets a monopoly on city politics. And in presidential election years, whoever wins the big city ends up winning the state. Whoever wins the state gets all the electoral votes for the state, and the president is elected by electoral votes. There's a clear political advantage to one party by having violence increase in the cities.
I really think this is going to backfire, though, because some of those elusive voters, like suburban women, hopefully they're looking at this saying, wait a minute, we've got a clear decision this election cycle. There is this divisiveness and destruction and tearing down. Or do we want to aspire for that American idea of all men are created equal with these rights or from God of life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness? I am hoping that people will wake up on this. So, hey, Bill Federer, let's go to break. This is Kim Munson, The Kim Munson Show. I'm talking with Bill Federer. He is has the American Minute. You hear him many times on KLZ 560. And his new book is The History of Socialism. So we will be right back. Jason McBride, Presidential Wealth Management. It is Labor Day. And so we thought we'd do some quotes this week about labor, hard work, capitalism, American idea. So who do you have for us this Labor Day?
Well, first, I was thinking it would be like Tuesday through Friday and that you might give me Monday off. But speaking of labor, this is like a labor camp.
Sorry about that.
That's all right, Kim. That's all right. But, you know, I looked up some quotes for the week. It's interesting. Some of the later ones, a lot of them come from like socialists and people you wouldn't expect to appreciate hard work. Mm-hmm. Maybe they're talking about it as it relates to other people.
That could be
it. Not themselves. But the first one, I think is pretty interesting. It's employment is nature's physician and is essential to human happiness. And that came from Galen of Pergamon, who was a physician, surgeon, and philosopher in the Roman Empire. And I thought, boy, that one really fits with what's going on today. We've got so many people locked up at home. They can't go to work. They want to go to work and can't. And I believe that causes mental sickness. I think it causes physical sickness. And so I think Galen of Pergamon saying that, you know, employment is nature's physician. He was very far ahead of his time, or he was very prescient.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, Jason, there is something about being productive. And I have found that there's kind of been a movement for the last 40 years, just this undercurrent of comments about like work-life balance. It, certainly there needs to be work-life balance, but I grew up that you stay and you get the job done, mm-hmm. and then you go and have your balance, but you need to make sure that you get the job done.
Well, I agree, and I think that undercurrent is undercutting a lot of the good things about working hard and trying to say that maybe you don't have to, or maybe that's a bad thing, or like Nancy Pelosi said, unemployment's great because then people can sit home and do their art and do whatever silly thing she said. And I agree with you, Kim. I know when I'm not working hard or feeling like I'm being productive, you know, I get in a bad mood. I get cranky.
We don't want that.
I get down in the dumps. And, you want to feel like you're doing something productive for yourself, for your family, and hopefully for society as well.
And that's something that's inherent in the American idea. And when we get to do that, Jason, it opens up this big, broad middle class where everyday people can thrive and they can prosper. And that is something that is so unique about the American idea.
Well, it certainly is. And we have to keep fighting to keep that idea because they're trying to wash it away as quickly as possible. This latest situation with this virus has, you know, given them leverage to try to do it. And we've got to fight to get back to normal and not to a new normal, just back to old normal, if you ask me.
Well, and that normal is a big, broad middle class, thriving, prospering, investing in their nest egg. And that's something that you specialize in.
Well, we do. You know, we hope people will do the hard work and that your money will do some hard work for you as well. So later in life, when you'd like to maybe settle down and not work quite so hard, your money can assist you in doing that. And you'll have what we like to call a play check for retirement.
A play check.
Yes.
There you go. And so people, in order to reach you, I have your phone number memorized. It's 303-694-1600, 303-694-1600. And then, Jason, we have this really great landing page together, and I would recommend that people go take a look at that. You've recently done an analysis of kind of apples to apples of a couple before and after the Trump tax cuts. And while the Democrats like to say that this tax cut was for millionaires and billionaires, you proved that actually everyday hardworking people have more money in their pocket.
Yeah, that's easy to see on that one. It also shows you why the Colorado tax went up a little bit. Kim, on an upcoming show soon, we're going to discuss a lot of different tax things and have some info available for folks to see in many different ways how the Trump tax cuts helped many different types and classes of folks.
And so to get that information, go to AIR, that's A-I-R, presidential.com. That's AIRpresidential.com. Jason, we'll talk to you tomorrow morning.
All right. Thanks, Kim.
And we'll be right back with Bill Federer.
Karen Levine has over 30 years in the real estate industry. The reaction to the COVID-19 Wuhan virus is presenting unprecedented and unpredictable opportunities and challenges in buying or selling your home. That is why you need to work with award-winning realtor Karen Levine. Karen Levine comes highly recommended by Kim Munson. Call award-winning realtor Karen Levine today at 303-877-7516. Karen's expertise will help guide you through this crazy real estate market. Call Karen Levine at 303-877-7516 today.
You'd like to get in touch with one of Kim Munson's sponsors, but you can't recall their phone number. Find a full list of advertising partners on Kim's website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim, M-O-N-S-O-N.com.
And I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free. And I won't forget the men who died, who gave that right to me.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Thrilled to have on the line with me Bill Federer. He is the creator of the American Minute. And you can sign up for that at his website. And you can also get his new book, Socialism, the Real History from Plato to the Present, and that is at AmericanMinute.com, AmericanMinute.com. And this is just hot off the press, Bill Federer, so it's so exciting to have you on the show.
Yeah, well, it's so important because socialism is the eternal bait and switch. It's this promising of a dream, it delivers a nightmare. And it's wanting to have heaven on earth without God. And I go through, the pilgrims had what's called a covenant form of government. What's that? It's people in agreement with each other, but it's more than an agreement. You're committed to helping each other, and you get your rights from God, and you're accountable to God. So like a triangle. In the next century after the pilgrims, you have the Age of Enlightenment, and covenant turned into social contract, which is just an agreement with each other. And, yeah, if God's there, he's distant. It comes from the Scientific Revolution where, Sir Isaac Newton discovers laws of planetary motion, laws of gravity, laws of optics, and Robert Boyle, laws of pressure. And some theologians said, well, maybe God created laws, and like a guy winds up a clock and sets it on the shelf, and all the gears do their thing. Maybe God just created everything and stepped back. And so if God is there, he's distant. Well, in the next century, Age of Enlightenment social contract with a distant God turns into the French Revolution, which is social contract with no God. It's rights from the group, you're accountable to the group. And their motto is liberté, égalité, fraternité. Now, fraternité was the French word for socialism, right? Fraternity, collective. And equality can be understood two different ways. In America, equality was equal treatment before the law, equal opportunity. But in France, it was everyone having an equal amount of stuff. And so if the group thinks you have too much stuff, it can use the power of the state to take away your stuff and kill you. So Jean-Jacques Rousseau, father of the French Revolution, wrote in The Social Contract, he says, if the state says to an individual, it is expedient for the state that you should die, that individual should die.
Oh my gosh.
Life is a gift made conditionally by the state. Well, in the next century, French Revolution with no God turns into Marxism and socialism where the state is God. And Hegel, the philosopher in Berlin, says the state is God walking on earth. The state is our mortal God. All the worth that a human being has, he has only through the state. So we go from pilgrim covenant with an intimate God to a social contract with a distant God to social contract with no God to Marxism and socialism where the state is God. And a great quote from Eisenhower, he said, in some countries, the state claims to be the author of human rights. If the state gives rights, it can and inevitably will take away those rights. So every socialist experiment has to get rid of God so that the rights come just from the state. Now, when you look at the French Revolution, you after all the killing, they chopped off the heads of you know, the royalty and the businessmen and everybody. And then out of that chaos, you get a dictator, a philosopher king, so to speak, named Napoleon. Napoleon conquers Europe. 6 million people die. The king of Prussia said, we can't let that happen again. We need to strengthen our state. So he gets Hegel to be his philosopher. And Hegel started a radical student group at the University of Berlin called the Young Hegelians. And who was a member of the Young Hegelians? Karl Marx.
Huh.
Now, Hegel says, okay, how do you strengthen the state? You have to take power away from the people. But how do you do that? When the people are scared, they give up their freedom. And so it's a triangle. One corner is a thesis. The opposite corner is an antithesis, antithesis. And the top corner is a synthesis. It sounds complicated, but it's not. In other words, you start up with the status quo, and you create a problem that is real bad, and then everybody's happy to settle for your answer. This half is bad. And then that becomes the new thesis starting point. You create another problem that's real bad, and everybody gives up their freedoms to have a solution, which is only half as bad. You keep doing this over and over, crisis after crisis, and after each one, the people give up a little more of their freedoms, the power is concentrated in the state, and you finally have a socialist government.
Okay, just a
and
question
so
on that,
Marx,
Bill. Is this something I heard, is it the Hegelian dialect? Is that what you're describing by any chance?
Yes.
Okay, got it. Okay. So, yeah.
Right, so it's the intentional creating of a crisis. So it's this, you keep hearing this, tear down, we got to tear down, right? Well, what happens when you tear down? There's chaos, and then everybody says, we need the chaos solved. We need some mayor or governor to come in and restore order. And yeah, they'll restore order, but they'll take away all your freedoms mm-hmm. in the process.
Mm-hmm.
Take away your Second Amendment rights, take away your freedom of speech, take away your freedom of assembly. And so Karl Marx, he's a student at the University of Berlin. And he learns from Hegel, and he says, okay, how do you create a really good antithesis? You send in agitators, agent provocateurs, community organizers, labor organizers. Their job is to identify groups with grievances, ethnically, religiously, racially, economically, and you organize them to protest and riot. And when there's insecurity in life and property and people are dying, everyone says, we need the government to step in, and the government steps in, and you have some governor that usurps power. And so 45 countries saw the communism this way. Now, let's fast forward. So Karl Marx lives in the early, middle 1800s. Let's go to the late 1800s. We have a guy named Eugene Debs. He's a socialist, and he's in Chicago, and there's the railroad car company, the Pullman Railroad Car Company. It's a nice factory, and then they have a little village for the workers to work in that the factory pays for. Then there's shops for the workers to shop in, the factory pays for. It's a little great place until price orders for railroad cars drop. So it's an economic crisis. Well, Eugene Debb goes in, and he finds people with grievances, and he serves them up to riot. They riot and destroy $80 million worth of railroad cars in 27 different states.
Wow.
Finally, the president, Grover Cleveland, had to send in the U.S. Army to restore order. And then finally, Eugene Debs is thrown in jail, but he starts the Socialist Party of America. And then he wants to have, in solidarity with the communists in the Soviet Union and, you know, in Russia, wants to have May 1st be Labor Day. And Grover Cleveland decides, well, I'll go ahead and cave, but I'm going to have it be on September, the first Monday in September, because I don't want to have it be lined up with the international communists and socialists. And so that's the origin of Labor Day. Now, Eugene Debs decides to run for president five times from 1900 to 1920 as the Socialist Party candidate in America. In 1920, branching off of the Socialist Party of America is the Communist Party of America. And they run a candidate for president every year from 1920 to 1940 until Franklin Roosevelt during World War II makes a treaty with Stalin. And the Communist Party USA says, well, why should we be running another candidate? Well, we have a candidate that's making treaties with Stalin. So from 1940 on, the Communist Party USA has supported the Democrat Party.
Fascinating.
And now we're getting into the 1930s, and you have Germany. There's a republic, and there's a guy that starts a political party. The political party's name is the National Socialist Workers' Party. You know the acronyms, mm-hmm. Nazi. And who's the head of the party? Hitler. It's a political party. It's like an Antifa. It's like a BLM. It's like a political group. And Hitler has his brown shirts. And they're also called Sturmabteilung, which means stormtroopers, because they would storm into the meetings of Hitler's opponents and shout down the speakers and disrupt the meeting. And then they would lock arms and block access to buildings and block streets. Could you imagine people locking arms and blocking streets? And then they went into the cities and smashed the windows of over 7,000 Jewish stores in the Night of Broken Glass, Kristallnacht. And in this confusion, Hitler rounds up his political enemies, has them shot without a trial, and then when the dust settles, Germany transitioned from a republic to a dictatorship. And so this model is you want to have your troublemakers go in there and create crises so that you can have some governor or mayor have an excuse to declare martial law.
And that's happening now, right now in America, Bill Fetter.
Right. It's a tried and true procedure. You know, the British did this. That's how they took over India. India had hundreds of kingdoms and British lands in Bengal and has a little trading post. And then they turn it into a fort. And then they give guns to one kingdom. Then they give guns to another kingdom. And then they stir up ancient animosities. So these kingdoms start fighting each other. And then the British come in to restore order and they take over. And they disarm them. Then they do it with another kingdom, until finally Britain took over all of India, a quarter of the world's population. They tried doing it to America during the Revolutionary War by giving guns to Indians and promising them money for scalps. And so they scalped people in Fort Mims, Alabama, and, you know, the Jane McCrae story there and before the Battle of Saratoga.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so after World War II, and I don't know if we're coming up on a break or not, but that's where it gets even more interesting, where you have these countries that have come out of, you know, the colonies of England, France, and Germany, and they have brand new countries, and it's a wonderful world until the Soviet Union decides it wants to expand and infiltrate these countries. And if you want, I can
talk about this
after the break.
Yeah, let's do that.
AmericanMinute.com, and the book is called Socialism, the Real History from Plato to the Present.
Again, and that's AmericanMinute.com where you can get the book. And this is Bill Fetter that we're talking with, who is the creator of American Minute. Before we go to break, though, I want to just mention this great new partner of mine, Castlegate Knife and Tool. They're a family-owned business. They're located right here in the metro area in Sedalia, Colorado. They're open all 7 days a week, and they have a wide selection of knives, whether or not you're a sportsman, you need to get a wedding gift, a utility knife, a collector, military. It is a fascinating store, and I would highly recommend that you maybe some weekend just go out and take a look at that. But you can go to their website. It's castlegate.com. That's castlegate.com. And we'll go to break. We'll be right back with Bill Fetter.
Predovich & Company understands that the COVID-19 Wuhan virus disruption has individuals and businesses scratching their heads with a variety of bookkeeping, tax planning, and accounting questions. Predovich & Company knows that you need trusted professionals to help you navigate these choppy waters. Kim Munson highly recommends Predovich & Company. Because of their advanced technological capabilities, Predovich & Company can help clients anywhere in the United States. Call Predovich & Company at 303-791-3000 to organize your personal and business finances. Call 303-791-3000 today.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. That is Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. You can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. Sign up for our weekly newsletter and go over to Facebook and give us a like. And this is just such a fascinating conversation, particularly for Labor Day. William Fetter, Bill Fetter, has written a very important book. It's Socialism, the Real History from Plato to the Present. And the subtitle is How the Deep State Capitalizes on Crises to Consolidate Control. You can get that book at AmericanMinute.com. That's AmericanMinute.com. It just came out. It's hot off the press, so be the first on your block to get that. Bill Fetter, before we went to break, you said we've now gotten to World War II. Where are we at on this whole spectrum of socialism?
So World War II ends, and France, England, Germany give up their colonies, and they become brand new countries. and they have brand new leaders. It's a perfect world, except for the Soviet Union decides it wants to infiltrate. So they would send KGB agents into Czechoslovakia, into Romania, into Poland, into Hungary, and they would find groups of people with grievances. They're economically discriminated against, ethnically, racially, religiously. Mm. And they would break them into groups of victims and oppressors. And then they would stir them up to protest and then escalate it into a riot and then cause windows being smashed and things burning. And then they co-opted the media with bribes and threats to blame the leader of the country. And when the public got confused and panicky enough, they did a coup or a rigged election, and they would remove the leader, put in a Soviet puppet. And people at first were happy that the violence stopped, but then the dust settled. They realized they just gave up their brand new free country, and now they're condemned to totalitarianism. Now, Truman does nothing. He thinks his United Nations is going to bring world peace. But Eisenhower is the next president. He fights fire with fire. Iran has a leader who sides with the Soviet Union. His name is Mossadegh, and he decides to nationalize the oil industry in Iran. You say, big deal. Well, wait a second. Britain had no oil, and Winston Churchill changed the British Navy from coal to oil. And so in 1908, Britain formed the Anglo-Iranian Oil Company. You know it better as BP. And so when Mossadegh nationalized BP and took it away, Britain had no oil. And so they turned to Eisenhower, who approves the first CIA operation to overthrow a country's leader. It's Operation Ajax. John Foster Dulles is the Secretary of State overseeing it. The CIA operative on the ground in Tehran is Kermit Roosevelt Jr., the grandson of Teddy Roosevelt. And he does the same thing. He recruits mobsters, gangsters, criminals, and radical imams, and they stage protests and riots and attack mosques. They co-opt the media with bribes and threats. They cultivate weak links in the military. And when the public gets confused and panicky enough, they put Mossadegh under house arrest, lock him away for the rest of his life where he died, and they installed the Shah. And the Shah loved America because we put him in. We did the same thing in Guatemala, 1954, the Congo, 1960, Dominican Republic, even Chile, 1973. And the KGB did the same thing, where there's pictures of Yasser Arafat hugging Brezhnev and the Russians helping start his PLO. And Brezhnev is hugging Castro and helping him to take over Cuba. And the Russians are taking over countries in Latin, South America, Africa, and then the Chinese do the same thing in the Far East. This is called the Cold War. And it's the basis of every spy novel, right? You go to a third world country, you run into the Russians, the KGB, and the CIA, and they're going to do an assassination. The only difference this time around is it's taking place on American soil. There's been 7 years of perfecting this concept. Now, we already know there's people in the Department of Justice, CIA, Department of State that do not like our president. And when you look at the orchestrated dropping off of pallets of bricks right where they're going to have a peaceful protest, somebody's organizing this. And, you know, I was speaking in Emporia, Kansas, and they said, yeah, when they were doing the riots, somebody dropped off a pallet of bricks right. There was no construction in the area, but that's right where they were going to have a peaceful protest. And so the idea is that this has fingerprints of somebody behind it with a bigger agenda. And then you look at elections. The one party has a weak candidate. And in politics, historically, whoever is the president when there is an economic collapse gets voted out. Herbert Hoover is the perfect example. Herbert Hoover, you know, Quaker, grows up, first graduating class of Stanford in mining, goes over to Australia and then ends up becoming a part owner in mines in India and Russia and Egypt and all around the world. And he's an international businessman. And then after World War One, Herbert Hoover organizes volunteer organizations and businesses to feed Europe. And then in 1927, Mississippi River floods, and there is no FEMA. Herbert Hoover organizes all these groups to feed millions of people. He's so popular, he's swept in as president. He never took a salary from the federal government. 8 months later, there's an economic collapse. he was working the same plan to turn things around, but he was sabotaged at every corner by the Democrat opponents so they could put in FDR, who had his big government solutions. And following him, you had Lyndon Johnson with his great society welfare state, big government solutions and power concentrating into the hands of the government. And so we see that this is a model. And, you know, I like to sort of stand back and say, would people actually do that? And if you think, well, gee, if a party has in their platform killing innocent babies, is there anything they wouldn't do?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, so this is the time to pause and to really reflect back on it. But there is a political advantage to one party by having violence goes up in the city. People feel unsafe and move out. Who moves out tends to be people in a higher economic ability to afford to move out. Who's left in the city, those are that are dependent. And in election years, whoever wins the city ends up getting the state. Whoever wins the state gets all the electoral votes for the state, and the president is elected by electoral votes.
You know, Bill, I'm hopeful in as much as I continue to tell Democrats, Democrat friends of mine, this is no longer the Democrat Party of JFK. JFK actually lowered taxes. He probably would be a moderate Republican these days. This is no longer the party of JFK. This Democrat Party has had this huge lurch to the left. And what you're talking about, the destruction and divisiveness, I don't think people want that. We want to get back to unity. And I found it interesting watching the DNC that they used the word unity, but yet they were doing everything to divide us. So they say one thing, but they do another. And I think that was one of the first things that you said about socialism is a classic bait and switch.
Right. There's actually a term for it. It's called psychological projection. Sigmund Freud coined the term. It's where rude people call everyone they don't like rude. Little kids do this. I didn't start the fight. You started it. So it's blame shifting. The attacker blames the victim. Sharia Muslim men will rape a woman and say, it's your fault that I raped you because you tempted me. And so it's gotten into politics. And David Axelrod, who was President Obama's campaign manager, said in an NPR radio interview, in Chicago politics, we have a tradition. You throw a brick through your own campaign office window, and then you call a press conference to accuse your opponent of having done it. And so this is standard operating procedure. If there's a candidate that is colluding with Russia, maybe giving away a fifth of the U.S. uranium in exchange for a $145 million contribution to our Clinton Foundation, what do you want to do? You want to accuse your opponent of colluding with Russia. Why? Because their name gets associated with it in the headlines, and most people only read the headlines, the subject line of the email, and they make a subconscious connection. If the public ever finds out, you're really the guilty one. By that time, the water is muddied. The public doesn't know who to trust, and you get a pass. Same thing. If there's a candidate that is extorting the Ukraine, saying, stop investigating my son, or I'm going to withhold billions of dollars worth of aid, well, you want to accuse your opponent of extorting Ukraine. You choose the exact thing that you're guilty of. You blame your opponent. His name is associated with it in the press over and over again. If it finally comes back to you by that time, the water's muddied, the public is confused, and you get a pass. It's a very interesting strategy. It's called psychological projection. It is every single day in the news.
Well,
the fitness group is a hate group. Well, wait a second. You're the hate group calling them the hate group. Right? This group is intolerant. Wait a second. You're the intolerant group. This group is racist. No. You're the racist group calling them the innocent people racist.
It truly is fascinating. So another thing is we're starting to see this drumbeat that from the left and the media that that if Donald Trump is reelected, that he won't leave the White House. But yet Hillary Clinton was just on a Showtime video saying that Joe Biden should under no circumstances concede the election. So I think that is a very interesting example of psychological projection, Bill Fetter.
Yeah, so they're signaling what they're planning on doing. They're planning on trying to steal it, and so they want to set the tone that they want to let everyone psychologically be aware of it. They do this also with polling. So if a candidate is winning, but they poll him as losing, Then if they do the fraud, nobody fights it because they say, well, I read it in the news and I expected it. So we look at this mail-in voting. One of the things is if there are millions of ballots that are being mailed, about a third of mail-in ballots are challenged and thrown out, and they have recounts and they have legal challenges. There was a Democrat primary in New Jersey. It took 6 weeks to do the recount. Why is this important? If the presidential election has mail-in ballots and there's millions of them challenged and it gets dragged out till January 20th, 2021, the Constitution says that the president and vice president have to step down and the Speaker of the House becomes the acting president. So if they can overload the mail and if they can have all these legal challenges and recounts and if they can drag it out till January 20th, then Nancy Pelosi gets to be the acting president.
Wow. So elections, my gosh, they have consequences. There is no way. I mean, a rocket scientist, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure it out. There is no way that this close to election that states, that county clerks, that they could actually get ballots printed and get them sent out and have a system in place. It is really trying to steal this election. Bill Fetter, we are just about out of time. I would highly recommend that people get your book. And that is, let's see, my computer went to sleep here. It is
Socialism, the Real History from Plato to the Present.
There we go. And people can get that at AmericanMinute.com. That's AmericanMinute.com. Bill Fetter, what is the final thought that you would like to leave with our listeners this Labor Day?
You read history, every generation has a crisis. Attila the Hun, Genghis Khan, bubonic plague. And the crisis is an opportunity for you to step forward and show what you're made of. Right? You can be part of the problem, you can ignore the problem, or you can be part of the answer, ministering God's love to a hurting world, defending the defenseless, and so forth. And so, you know, I think that this is the Lord putting us in this position so that we can stand up instead of saying, well, you know, we're just going to sit back and see what happens. No. This is our chance. What are the stories we love best in history? It's when people are in a crisis and a little nobody stands up with courage, whether it's a David or a Gideon or a Moses. This is our turn. So let's stand up. Let's be courageous. And let's trust the Lord to turn this around and give us more time to be a great nation and to share his love.
Well, indeed, Bill Fetter, and we stand on the shoulders of giants. You bring these stories forward all the time at the American Minute. So be sure and check out AmericanMinute.com for this fabulous new book, Socialism, and it is the History of Socialism from Plato to the Present. Bill Fetter, thank you so much, and have a great day.
Thank you, Kim.
And our quote for today is from Bill Fetter. He says, governments do not create, individuals create. Every invention was once just a thought inside someone's head. And my friends today, be grateful, read great books, think good thoughts, listen to beautiful music, communicate and listen well, live honestly and authentically, strive for high ideals, and like Superman, stand for truth, justice, and the American way. This is Kim Munson signing off. God bless you, and God bless America.